So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, chapter 9, verses 65 and 66. Okay, that's good. I haven't revised the wrong verses. Okay, so this chapter is entitled Lord Chaitanya's Travels to the Holy Places. So what I'll do is I will read 65 and the translation, and then we will chant 66 together. Translation. After arriving at Tirupati, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Lord Ramachandra. He offered his prayers and obeisances before Ramachandra, the descendant of King Raghu. Okay, so we'll recite 66. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, everywhere Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went, his influence astonished everyone. He next arrived at the temple of Pana Nasimha. The Lord is so merciful. Purport. Pana Nasimha, or Pana Kal Narasimha, is located in the district of Krishna, in the hills known as Mangalagiri, about 7 miles from a city known as Vijayawada. One must climb 600 steps to reach the temple. It is said that when the Lord is offered food with syrup here, he does not take more than half. Within this temple is a conch shell presented by the late king of Tanjore, and it is said that this shell was used by Lord Krishna himself. During the month of March, a great fair takes place in this temple. Okay. Omegyanatamarandasya. Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Twam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate. Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this chapter is narrating the different pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he travels to different places, different holy places. It is very interesting that just generally, when we look at our tradition, there's so much personal information about the Lord. Oh, actually, let me go back a step. First, I should ask for the blessings of the senior devotees. So, ask for their blessings and, all, of course, all the Vaishnavas so we can speak something that will be pleasing to Srila Prabhupada and the Guru Parampara. So, this is very significant. We hear about the Lord and he's actually on pilgrimage. As we can see here, he's visiting different temples, and as he's visiting these different temples, he's offering respects to the different forms of the Lord. Ramachandra has been mentioned in the previous verse. Here is mentioning Lord Nishima. So the Lord greeting the Lord. But again, this exchange is emphasizing the subtlety of our Vaishnava tradition, the message of Mahaprabhu. The message of Mahaprabhu is to call out to the entire world the exalted position of the servant. So we talk about avatar, one who descends. one who descends. But Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is extolling by his own example the exalted position of what it means to be a servant. And this is not a small thing, because this speaks to the fundamental reason why every living entity who's in material consciousness is unhappy. It all comes down to this one fundamental misconception, which we, even in the stage of practice as devotees, sometimes struggle to get our consciousness around. And that is that there is no joy in the part and parcel being the master. That it is the fundamental nature of every living entity to exclusively derive joy from being in the position of a servant. This anya bilasata shunyam, jnana kamada navritam, anukulyena krishna nushilanam bhakti uttama. This is absolutely fundamental to everything that we do. And therefore, it is not just an activity of service, it is also a mentality of service. It is an unfortunate fact that we will see play out in the lives of so many practitioners of bhakti, that we can be in this practice for so long and sometimes attain so little, because we sometimes get the form and the substance confused. Right? We can often have the form of being a servant. So we may be doing all these external activities. We have the form of being a servant, and we can do that for decades. But what is being spoken of in our literatures is a complete ecosystem. It means the form must be there, and also the mentality must be there, the mood must be there. And only when all of these things come together, only when all of these things come together, do we significantly move forward. So every time we hear about the pastimes of the Lord, we see something very, very extraordinary. And this should break the heart of a devotee. The Krishna is so extremely kind. He gave the message previously in his own Swayam Bhagavan form, original form. He gave the message, this Sarvadham and Parichaja, but he knew that the living entities didn't quite get the message. He understood, okay, I've said it, but they didn't quite get it yet. So I'm going to do it again. I'm going to give the message again, but I'm going to give it in a more thorough way. Because we may say something and people may or may not understand, but when they see it, then it's far easier to understand. So therefore, all of these pastimes are to show us what it's like, and no one can be a better devotee than the Lord. Whatever he does, he excels, especially because he is carrying the mood. He's carrying the mood of his topmost devotee. So that is one of the key sub-narratives, right? In our scriptures, there is what is seen, and then there is what is indicated, right? So there is, I think the term is vyanjanavritti, the implied meaning. So the scriptures have that. They have so many layers of pregnant meaning, and more can be derived as one understands it. It is very interesting here that what is being different incarnations are being spoken of. Lord Ramachandra and also Lord Nrisimhadev. So when the Lord's incarnations come, they have different greed. It is said that Nrisimhadev, he has two forms, Ugra and Anugra. Right? So Ugra is fierce, and we often hear about that form of the Lord. Anugra is very peaceful. So when he killed Hiranyakashipu, he was so angry. It is said that he was angry. He was actually angry also at the demigods, that they couldn't approach him. Actually, what they did is they told Prahlad, come on, you know, he likes you. You know, you go and pacify him. One of the reasons why Nrisimhadev was angry with the demigods is because when Prahlad had been harassed in so many ways, they didn't do anything to help him. So he was angry, so they couldn't approach. But Prahlad approached, and when Prahlad approached, Nrisimhadev became Anugra. He became peaceful. And actually it said that he was licking Prahlad's body. Right? He was very, very peaceful. And it is said that Nrisimhadev is a form of Vatsalya Prema. Okay, this parental love. So that's the exchange between Nrisimhadev and Prahlad. But at that time, Lord Nrisimhadev realized that between him and Prahlad, Prahlad was experiencing more ecstasy, right, than the Lord himself. So it is said that from that particular point onwards, whenever an incarnation of the Lord appeared, he always appeared with parents. Because Nrisimhadev was thinking, I've just appeared out of this pillar. You know, there's not really any rasa going on there. Yeah. It is also said that Lord Ramachandra had also a certain greed. Lord Ramachandra, he has this Sakyaras friendship with Sugriva and Vibhishan. But there's two types of Sakyaras. I was just making some notes before. Sambrahma Sakyaras is actually friendship, but it's friendship still with awe and reverence. And then there's Vishramba Sakyaras, which is the kind of friendship that is experienced by Krishna with his cowherd boyfriends. So Lord Ramachandra, in his exchange with Vibhishan and Sugriva, it's still that awe and reverence. They would never dare put their feet on the Lord's head. No way. Right, because they still have this awe and reverence. But he had agreed for experiencing that fullness of the Sakyaras. So that was fulfilled when he appeared as Lord Krishna. And so with Krishna and the cowherd boys, no holds barred, right? They'll wrestle Krishna, you know, Mother Mangal will try and correct Krishna. So it's a different type of rasa, but it's full-blown Sakyaras. So even the Lord has this type of greed and this interest. It's very interesting also here, in this verse 65, is talking about Sri Chaitanya arriving at Tirupati. So Tirupati is considered the world's richest temple, right? The temple of Balaji. So Prabhupada, he came to Tirupati in 1974. He was invited by the government, actually. And so he stayed there for 2 days. And he would go three or four times a day to the temple. And he also spoke. He spoke to one of the government ministers. Prabhupada was very impressed at how efficiently the temple was run in terms of the management. And he liked the infrastructure. So he told the board there, he said that you should take assistance from ISKCON. That's what he told. Prabhupada was always considering how to expand the mission. He told them, he said, you should take assistance from ISKCON devotees in order to expand the preaching. So that's what he actually told the temple. Interestingly enough, Prabhupada told the devotees something slightly different. He told the devotees, he said that, let's see, I made some notes on the way here. He said we should build attractive temples like Balaji and make very good facility for the pilgrims so that they can come. His mind was always on how can we expand the mercy? You see? It's easy to get it confused. You could think, how can we expand the infrastructure? No, it's first, how can we expand the mercy? The infrastructure is there as a facility to expand the mercy. Do you see the point? So everything about Krishna consciousness means, everything about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's endeavors means, how can we expand compassion? How can I show compassion to humanity who is suffering? And even if people think that they're not suffering, actually it doesn't matter. We are hierarchical, by the way. You see, there's a kind of sub-narrative in the modern society, everyone's opinion is equal. We don't agree with that, just so you know. We don't agree with it. We can speak to someone and the person can look us in the eye and tell us, actually, I'm okay. And we will tell them, I know you know your own life and the ins and outs of your own life, but excuse me, sir, you're wrong. You're not okay. We have that boldness on the basis of understanding. We have that boldness on the basis of higher authority, that actually it's not a question of what people think, it's a question of what's actually the deep truth, what's actually the deep reality. And it is on that basis, it is on that conviction that everything that is done in this Krishna consciousness movement is done. So we should always think, what is the truth? What is the actual truth of the situation, both my own and that of other people? Because it's not such an easy thing to understand. Okay, just stop it. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gonitai Guru Parampara Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. We speak on the basis of the truth. And the truth also can sometimes reveal itself over time. For example, the truth of the physical body. The truth that this body, in course of time, breaks down and decays. So someone may think, I'm okay right now, but that's not the point. The point is we have to see the entire picture. And that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. It is both deep and complete. You see? And all judgments in life are meant to be made from the platform of a complete picture. The material world is an incomplete picture. Therefore, decisions made on the basis of materialism give an incomplete result, and often they give the opposite of the result that they purport to give. That's why it's so dangerous. Huh? That's why it's so dangerous. And that's why people need these teachings. We need the teachings to have a complete picture. I was watching this debate, atheists versus it was I think one Catholic minister or a priest. It was quite interesting, but also quite sad. To be fair to the Catholic priest, he actually did a good job of standing his ground, but of course the answers were not substantial, because the theology and their answers therefore could only take things a certain distance. But what was interesting also was what was actually happening in that debate was really rhetoric, right? You know the difference between rhetoric and debate. What happens in the modern society, people are not really asked, we're not having a conversation to understand what's true. Because to have a conversation to understand what's true, the individuals in that discussion have to be mature and detached. It requires sobriety. And you see this sometimes even in our movement. Sometimes you see this in our movement. In order to have a mature conversation, you have to have impartial individuals who will come down and let's honestly talk about the facts. That means no insults, no looking for clever ways to make the other person look stupid or humiliate them, but actually very, very mature, let's pull our cards on the table. We're going to say what we think is the best way to move forward. And then what's the authority? The authority is Prabhupada. What is in the books? What is the principle? What is the detail? How does it apply to the current time, place, and circumstance? That's a mature and thorough understanding of the truth. I was speaking with one of my mentees recently, and we were talking about, you know, just some aspects of, you know, how he would, engage in his ashram and different things. And we were talking about the difference between the form and the substance. So, for example, there are many aspects of our Vedic teachings, and you could say, well, this is tradition, so we should follow it. There's real validity in that, by the way. Right? We shouldn't throw out the baby with the bathwater. There are many aspects of our tradition which are extremely wholesome and extremely nourishing, as long as they are properly applied. As long as they are properly applied. If they're properly applied, in other words, we have I gave him the example. I said, well, scripturally speaking, it is said that the wife should be submissive to the husband, right? Sometimes the men, they remember some of the verses more than others, right? Right. It's said like that. So I said to my mentee, I said to him, so if you had a daughter, would you tell your daughter to do whatever her husband tells her? And of course, because he's intelligent, he said, not necessarily. I said, why? He said, of course, it depends on the qualification. You understand the point? And this is something very, very important. It's the form and the substance, right? So what we have in modern society, and it's very unfortunate, so many times we have the form, but not necessarily the substance, and that's where it becomes problematic. But then you get two extremes. One extreme is we get rid of everything. Wrong. The other extreme is we fanatically hold on to form, and then even if it's not working, we just think, well, that's what the scripture says. Wrong. That's also wrong. So the scripture has depth and completeness. Both things are there, depth and completeness. And therefore, when we understand that, it will eradicate so many of the misunderstandings and the disagreements that we see in the modern society and within our movement. Because oftentimes both sides, if we're honest, again, if we're sober, impartial, and honest, oftentimes both sides have some legitimate concern, right? So sometimes you have a very traditionalist approach, and there's a legitimate concern. There's these forms, these traditional interactions, there's validity to them, right? As long as they're practiced properly and they're not misused. The other side is also true. Sometimes people will think, oh, well, you know, there's been a misuse, so we shouldn't go for them. There's some validity to that in the sense that if something is being dysfunctionally applied, we have to look at that. But there is also a middle ground where we both have the form and it's properly applied. Right? When we have both of these things, then we can have a very, very healthy consideration. So what can counteract the polarization that we see in the modern world, and we see a lot of polarization, it's karmic, by the way. That's why you see it as much inside as you see it outside. What can counteract the polarization is maturity and depth. You see? And Prabhupada, when he talks about this unity with diversity, right? It means so many different things. Our founder Acharya is so brilliant that sometimes he speaks in sutras. So he'll just make a statement, and then that sutra, it can be unpacked. More and more realization can come from just that one sutra. Yeah. It's interesting also in this pastime. See, in this particular area of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya, when he does his travels, there are so many things that will go on. He'll deliver Kala Krishna Das from the Bhattaharis. He will find the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita. I think it's the Paishvini River. Right? He'll find it there. He'll debate with the Tattvavadis. So many different leelas, pastimes, narratives that will go on. And what is that to show us? It is to show us that in the spiritual world there is unlimited variegatedness. In other words, you're never going to be bored in this Krishna consciousness. As long as the devotee is engaged in this process properly engaged, there is unlimited adventure, unlimited leela. And in fact, the ISKCON movement is an extension of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's own pastimes, an extension of his own pastimes for the purpose of spreading his mercy and his compassion to all the living entities of the world. And that is something that we have to really, give our heart to. When we talked about this expansion of the Lord's compassion and mercy, one way that, in a mundane sense, one of the ways in which people are socialized in a healthy way, and it seems so basic, but one of the ways in which people are socialized in a healthy way is to give them attention. When I was coming here, I got a lift from Ram Lakshman. And we were talking in the car. And he made a wonderful point, as he always does. We were talking about socialization and how when devotees come to the movement, sometimes there are so many unmet human needs which then spill over into the environment. And so we were just talking about how that works. And then one thing that it got me thinking is that in traditional Vedic society, because the parents weren't so stressed out and because the lifestyle was much more human and God-centered, therefore the parents were able to give real attention and time to the children. So by giving that focused time and attention to the children, what that would do for the child is it would deeply imbibe within the child an understanding that you are valuable and important. One of my friends, when he had his first child, he told his spiritual master, you know, he was just talking to him and, you know, getting some points. And his spiritual master told him, he said, for your child, you're their God. Right? So how you deal with them has a big impact. And Ayurveda says the same thing. So I was thinking about that, that focused attention automatically translates to the child that you're important. Now contrast that with the modern society. Contrast that. Generally, everyone's stressed out. They're so stressed out that they don't know how stressed out they actually are in the modern society. And then we also have the unfortunate and really damaging, actually, effects of modern technology. Yes, we should engage it because everyone's on that platform, but it's not neutral. We should be under no illusion. So they call this the attention economy, that the technology is built to get you looking at it as much as possible. So we've turned our attention from people and turned our attention to things. Okay? So then what happens is, therefore, people that we are speaking to, as they enter into the devotional environment, we may notice that there are so many personal and social dynamics that often need to be addressed. So in Kali Yuga, it's so much trying to come to the human form so that we can then go from the human form to become fully transcendental. Has anyone noticed that? Yes or no? Yeah, absolutely. Right? It's a big thing. So we have to be even more careful in our interactions with devotees, because a major part of the devotees' movement forward is how they become socialized in the association of the devotees. And I would humbly suggest that so many of our social and political issues that we see, they all come back to these same human level challenges. Right? They all come back to these same human level challenges, whether it's power politics or all kinds of crazy things like that. So we need to understand the value and the significance of association. And do not underestimate how the interactions that we have with each other, do not underestimate the impact that they have. Right? What we're trying to do is we're trying to do real devotional service. That means real devotional service without this desire for name, fame, adoration, profit, and gain. But it will be very hard for the devotees to really buy into that if we have a culture which is sending an opposite message. You see, there is, in terms of culture, there are two types of culture. There is the explicit culture, right? What is actually written down and official, okay? And then there is the indirect or covert culture. That means what gets rewarded. You understand the difference, right? So you have someone comes into the movement. We're all about pure love of Godhead. We're all about pure devotional service, selfless service. We can say that, and it's true, right? That is the official culture, because that is what is given by Prabhupada, and that is what is lived by Prabhupada. He didn't just write this down. This is what he demonstrated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, while he was physically on this planet. Now, at the same time, in every environment, every yatra, there is also an implicit culture, okay? There is also what is rewarded, what is allowed, right? What is emulated. And so we always want to make sure that as much as possible, both things are aligned. That the movement has so many wonderful and sincere devotees. I want to humbly request that we always remember, why did we come? Right? I want to humbly request that we always remember, why did I decide to say yes to Krishna consciousness? Why did I decide to come to this particular movement? And always to remember, and this was our first point, which we said is emulated by the example of Lord Chaitanya, to remember actually that nothing else is going to make us happy. Even if we think that it will, it won't. And sometimes you can see, sometimes we can drive so hard in the wrong direction. Okay. Only to find that again, we're back at the same spot. And what I mean by that same spot, we're back in the same place, we're unhappy. Even sometimes in Krishna consciousness, devotees are unhappy. Because this formula, this formula, it's not something that's being imposed. The Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are descriptions of reality. They're descriptions of the fundamental nature of the soul. They're descriptions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're descriptions of the loving exchanges that take place between the two of them, between the soul and the Lord. So these are reminders and they're also warnings that we have to align with this truth if we have any hope of being truly happy. We could also consider that all the problems in the world stem from emptiness. Everything, the greed stemming from emptiness, the lust stemming from emptiness. So the real solution is the permanent joy of devotion. When a living entity, when a devotee is progressively experiencing true loving exchanges with Krishna and his devotees, through the medium of selfless loving service, that joy becomes a freedom because it releases us from this possessiveness and from this insecurity. If you're full within, you need nothing without. You understand the point, right? If a living entity, if a devotee is full within, they need nothing without. I remember when I first came to the temple in London, ISKCON London, and I used to serve the lunchtime feast. I was studying at university. I'd come during break and just help with the food, you know. And I didn't make my own plate, right? But Krishna Vidhi, who was running the service, I just see out the corner of my eye, he's made a plate with my name on it, right? So, and then I was just reflecting. I'd see that, and then I'd serve more enthusiastically. I wasn't even conscious. It was like, you know, it's like, you know, suddenly, like, you can see a plate with your name on it. Suddenly, your service goes into another gear, right? It just moves up a notch. So the living entity is like that. There's a joy in devotion. We can say so many things. But you know what the real preaching is? The real preaching is a happy devotee. The real preaching is a happy devotee. When the devotees are engaged in this devotional service properly, when we serve properly, when we associate properly, when we accept the true philosophy properly, because you can accept the bogus philosophy even in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, Prabhupada says pure devotional service, but really it's okay. We could do something else, right? It's okay. Right? When we accept that properly, when we accept the truth properly, and when we act on that platform, the devotional power is explosive. It's very interesting in this particular verse. I mean, I'll read this again. This is 66. This first sentence struck me. Everywhere Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went, his influence astonished everyone. Isn't that amazing? We often talk about this bhakti shakti. And again, Prabhupada was like that. Prabhupada was like that. Wherever he went, his influence astonished everyone. It is sometimes even confusing to the devotees. You see all the people who are attracted to Prabhupada, and you think, how is it possible that this one person can attract such a diverse group of people? Have you ever wondered that? It means that because he's an empowered incarnation of Krishna, then like Krishna, he has this all-attractive potency, right? So you'll see in his disciples such diversity. Let's be very honest. You'll see in his disciples such a diversity, whereas many times you think many of these people, by their own devices, they would not associate with each other. They probably wouldn't have even come into the same circles. But this one personality was able to attract all of them. That's a miracle. It's very, very powerful. So this same astonishing potency is something that all devotees can tap into to the degree that we are properly connected to Krishna. Because, believe it or not, the Krishna consciousness movement, it continues to move by the mercy of the Lord, by the mercy of Krishna. So he's moving everyone, but he does it through his devotees. In other words, as Prabhupada says, it's a question of who wants to get the credit. Yeah. Now, there's more to it than that. When it comes to who wants to get the credit, there is something that Krishna has a plan and a purpose for every living entity. So it is incumbent upon all of us to do everything that we can to be used by Krishna. You know, as the saying goes sometimes, to be an instrument of the Lord's compassion. Okay? And then this same astonishing influence can be manifested through the activities of the devotee. Just like the pure devotee is selfless, the Lord is also selfless. He's prepared to do it, and he's prepared to give his own devotees the credit for something that he himself has done. I'm going to pause for a moment because I'm conscious. What time is class meant to finish?
8 to 9.
Yep.
Questions up until 9.
Okay. Because I have a habit of going over time, so I better be careful. Okay, so that same potency is really meant to be established. So we're meant to see miracles in the movement. We're meant to see miracles in the movement. And they will continue to happen if we continue to be open to being used. So what this means is we have to practice this. We talked about that form and substance. We have to practice being a devotee in form, but also a devotee in substance. So linking that to what we said earlier, the parents paying attention to the child, and that also gives something to the child, that sense of value, which the child carries into their later life, and which helps them to be a grounded, functional, balanced, and healthy human being. And then if at a certain point that person comes to Krishna consciousness, then from the human level, we come to the platform of pure devotion. It is very interesting. I was listening to something on this point about the chanting. It was an angle that I must have read before, but I forgot about it. It is said that when we're chanting, one of the reasons why we should chant attentively is because when you chant attentively, that chanting penetrates the subconscious. It goes deep into the consciousness of that devotee, and in that way it is able to clear away materialistic patterns that hold one back from making real progress in Krishna consciousness. You see, there are always opportunities in Krishna consciousness. There's always so many aspects of the philosophy that we can get deeper realization on. And what we're looking for is we're looking for compelling realization. What do I mean by that? You're looking for a realization that will compel you to align with the example that's given in the scripture. It's not enough to have an understanding. We want an understanding that will cause us to act more towards Krishna's pleasure. So again, this idea that attentive chanting, and this is why we emphasize both the form and also the consciousness, the mentality. Attentive chanting, it actually goes beneath the level of consciousness. It actually starts to transform something very, very deep within us, because we all have so many lifetimes of samskaras. Yeah. So don't think that whatever karma you're dealing with, the karma a living entity experiences in any one life is a fraction of their total karma. We sometimes forget that, right? So someone says, I've got good karma, bad karma. You don't even, trust me, you have no idea, right? No idea. You have what plays out in a particular life is a fraction of the karma. In Mahabharata, at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, Dhritarashtra approaches Krishna. He says to him, why is it the case that I was born blind and my 100 sons had to die? He's told that 50 lifetimes ago you were a hunter. You shot a flaming arrow in the nest of birds. The parent birds escaped, but the flames from the arrows seared their eyes, so they were blinded. Right, and the nest of birds, right? The 100 birds in the nest, they were killed. Right, that's why in this lifetime you were born blind, and your 100 sons had to die. And Dhritarashtra says, oh, I get that, but, he said, you know, but that was 50 lifetimes ago. That was 50 lifetimes ago. Why did it happen in this life? He was told, he said, because it took you 50 lifetimes to come to the point of having 100 sons. So our karma is playing out in different ways. It plays out in different ways. A portion of it is manifesting in a particular life. So understanding that, at the same time, devotional service is so powerful that it can literally end that entire cycle of samsara. So we should see the proper context. We should see the power and the gift that we're being given. And therefore, when we say attentiveness, we often talk about it in terms of chanting. But actually, everything in devotional service should be done attentively. Right? Everything in devotional service should be done attentively. Attentive chanting, attentive hearing, attentive reading, attentive service, and it should all be done with the right mood. These are secrets of acceleration. Secrets of acceleration. So sometimes we do, you know, as devotees, we know that there's a ninefold process. And Prabhupada, I believe it's the third canto of Bhagavatam, he will talk about how there's different combinations, okay? And he goes up to 81 combinations. So someone's hearing may be in the mode of goodness. Then their chanting may be in the mode of passion. And then their prayer may be in the mode of ignorance, right? So we do different aspects of devotional service in different modes. It is incumbent upon the devotee, therefore, to understand how can you do this devotional service in such a way that you're able to really get the most progress from your practice. And of course, because chanting is the Yuga Dharma, that becomes particularly significant in the way that we practice devotional service. Right? We were, I was in New Vrindavan recently, and so we were giving some seminars on the Madhurya Kadambini. And we were talking about this particular point, that there are many different stages of advancement, and in those different stages of advancement, there's different symptoms. But they all fundamentally come down to the same thing, different degrees of purity. Right? As Prabhupada would sometimes say, purity is the force. Purity is the force. Someone sent me this letter. It was very interesting. They sent me this letter by Prabhupada. Let me see if I've got it with me. It's a very, very interesting point that Prabhupada is making. I'm going to read it to you. So it was very, very interesting for me just because of Prabhupada's real emphasis on purity. And he really had great hope that the purity would make all the difference and would allow us to achieve so many wonderful things. So this is a letter that Prabhupada wrote to Yogeshwara, 28th of December, 1971. Quote, I have seen your advertisements as shown to me by Shama Sundar, and I think you have made the thing less important. This kind of ad is not good. It is not grave. Our process is to show Krishna consciousness as it is, not as others want to see it. Interesting, right? By showing Krishna consciousness in this way, you are making the thing less important. I don't know what that thing is in particular, but it is not that we should change to accommodate the public, but that we should change the public to accommodate us. Interesting. These books are the best advertising. They are better than advertising. If we simply present Krishna consciousness in a serious and attractive way. So it's not about not being attractive, but it's not losing the essence. In a serious and attractive way, without need to resort to fashionable slogans or tricks, that is sufficient. Our unique asset is our purity. Okay? No one anywhere can match it. Isn't that interesting? No one anywhere can match it. That will be noticed eventually. So it's not, and that's also interesting. Eventually, so not necessarily straight away. That will be noticed eventually and appreciated as long as we do not diminish or neglect the highest standard of purity in performing our routine work. Not that we require to display or announce ourselves in very clever ways to get attention. No, our pure standard is enough. Let us stand on that basis. Now again, I want to be very honest, because sometimes I see this mistake made in classes. We should always know that there are different statements by Prabhupada. We should understand that particular subject in a holistic way. Otherwise, we get into arguments in our movement all the time because one person's read one quote by Prabhupada and they've ignored everything else that Prabhupada said on the same topic. Right? And I'm sure we've seen that happen as well. Right? So, but just giving one particular insight based upon one thing that he said to one individual. Okay, so this is very important, and it's very powerful, right? We stand on our purity; no one can match us on that platform, right? And yet, at the same time, look at Prabhupada's ideas for the Temple of the Vedic Planetarium, right? Look at the architecture from different countries, and this statement that I mentioned about this directive from Prabhupada when he came to Tirupati. Right? At the same time, he saw the way that they were doing things, and he said, make sure that we should also build wonderful, attractive temples like that. So it's not a one-size-fits-all, but it's trying to understand the principle and trying to understand how we apply the principle according to time, place, and circumstance. And if we understand that, then we may have in one place in ISKCON the movement will present the philosophy and have the buildings in one way to attract that demographic. And in another place in ISKCON, the movement may build temples or buildings and preach in a certain way to attract a different type of audience. But the essence should not change. The essence must always be there, right? While at the same time, the compassion must be there to reach out without diluting the medicine. You see? If we change the medicine, then whatever you're bringing people to, no one gets cured. And so then in one sense, we've wasted our time, right? All that clever strategy and so on. We brought them somewhere. We gave them nothing. They still remain sick. So what did we do? In fact, in some ways, it's even worse. In some ways, it's even worse. Because they think they've come to a hospital and we've just invited them to something completely different, right? And at the same time, we don't want to go to the other extreme where it's just about the form. No one comes, but you know what? We don't care because we're following Prabhupada. You know, if that's the best we can do, okay. But if we can keep the active ingredients and still make it accessible to people, that's the ideal. So in everything that we're doing in this Krishna consciousness movement, we should follow the Lord, follow Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here. This last verse, right? So we read that first line, and in the last line it says, the Lord is so merciful. That's the key thing to remember. In Rupa Goswami's Ashabandha prayers, what does he say? He says, I do not have love of Godhead, nor do I have love for the process of hearing and chanting that will give me love of Godhead. Nor do I have, you know, high birth, mystic powers, abilities, so many things. I don't have any of these things. But because you, dear Lord, give your mercy, because you, dear Lord, give your mercy to the most fallen, I have this unbreakable hope that is always in my heart. He says, this hope is always giving me pain. So we should follow in that mood. We should always have this unbreakable hope that's always in our heart. Yes, in Kali Yuga is a bad age, right? Maybe you've noticed that, right? It's a bad age. And there are so many challenges. But because Krishna gives his mercy to the most fallen, as long as we don't make the mistake of removing ourselves from that position and thinking that I'm the most elevated, we actually want to cultivate the mood that we're the most fallen. Because as long as we stay in that mood that I'm the most fallen, we'll be humble, we'll be compassionate, we'll feel that anything that happens to us in spiritual life, we'll understand this is Krishna's causeless mercy and love. And in that mood, everything that happens, so-called good experiences and so-called bad experiences, they will infuse us. They will infuse us. We'll end on this point. someone who's actually becoming transcendental, we can say thank you to Krishna for everything. Right? What does it mean? It means I really accept that Krishna's in charge. So that devotee who gives you a hard time about your service or points out to you that you, Prabhu, Mataji, you're falling asleep when you're chanting. And in fact, your snoring is disturbing my chanting. Right? The person who does that, we should think Krishna's allowed that to happen. Thank you, Krishna. You're helping me to actually understand how significant the chanting is. When the devotees, you know, look at the reversals of Prabhupada, right? So many reversals. So many reversals. Having his manuscripts taken, you know, having, you know, people, you know, high on drugs, you know, who chase him out of his apartment, you know, being gored by a bull, heart attacks. So many reversals. So many reversals. Just to give us Krishna. We want to practice this transcendental mentality. Nothing should discourage a devotee if we truly absorb the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if we truly absorb the mood of our founder Acharya, then there are no obstacles. There's nothing that can disappoint or discourage us, because we remember that behind every circumstance and situation is the loving hand of Krishna. And even if I don't understand fully why something had to happen in a certain way at this time, there will still be a loving and compassionate reason behind it. Right? This is really where we need to go. And I often find in my own life, if we try to imbibe these things when there's no issue, it will come to our aid when the challenges appear. Does that make sense? So we should consider. Yeah, if we try to imbibe these points when there's no challenge, right? Let's say we're not dealing with a particular emergency. If we try to put these gems into our hearts before the test comes, before the emergency comes, then just like the student who's revised properly, right? You come into the class one day, the teacher says, surprise, surprise, we're going to do a snap test. Because we've already imbibed the answers, then we're able to handle the test. Therefore, nityam bhagavata sevaya. Huh? The regular hearing, the regular reading, and not just reading, but with submissive oral reception. The regular reading with submissive oral reception, these gems, these reminders that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead who loves everyone. The reminder that everyone, whether they are practicing or not practicing, that everyone by nature is a devotee. Everyone's a devotee. Not just the members of ISKCON. Not just the members of the Gaudiya Math. Even the auntie that you don't like. It's a subliminal thing, right? I have a lot of aunties, okay? But even the auntie that you don't like, even she's a devotee. Guess what? Wow, isn't that amazing? If we can absorb these into the consciousness, then remember that Krishna loves you, and he's rooting for your success. He's arranging everything, the tests and the encouragement, the messages, always hoping that we will take these deep into our heart, so that the next test that comes, we will pass the test with flying colors. Yeah, this is real Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness movement is a loving exchange between every part of humanity. In fact, every living entity. It's a loving exchange between every living entity and Krishna. Can you believe it? That's what you signed up for. Okay, so we'll stop there. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Janita Gaura Premanandi. Hari Hari. Okay, any questions, comments? Yes, can you pass the mic? Is there a microphone? Put this gentleman here.
You mentioned that devotees sometimes become unhappy or they are in the low moment. And you touched upon another point on doing chanting attentively. So suppose you are in a low moment, how do you ensure the quality of your chanting?
Okay. So, sure. So the point that was made, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that I mentioned about how sometimes even devotees, let's say practicing devotees, are sometimes unhappy, and that I mentioned the importance of attentive chanting. And the question came up, well, if we're in a low moment, how do we do that? How do we access that kind of attentive chanting in a low moment?
Yeah?
Yeah? Okay. So, let me meditate on that. Yeah. As devotees, we should know what particularly helps us to stay enthused. You see, part of devotional service is being self-aware even of our conditioning. Okay? I personally, if I'm really honest, I often see that sometimes the devotees, we don't apply the teachings properly. And in the name of being transcendental, we try to act above our adhika. Prabhupada said once, he said, do not try to be more of a Paramahamsa than me. He actually said that. Right? So what happens is, right now in our conditioned state, we should know what's required for me to remain enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness. What gets me out of a low moment, for example? And of course, one generic thing is association. Yeah? It is incumbent upon every devotee to have real association. Right? We all must have association that's mature, right? And well-wishing. Okay? So we can officially associate with the devotees. Right? That's okay. And there's a place for that. But we have to have friendships in devotional life. Right? But for that friendship, we also have to be open. Yeah? Because I was listening to something recently, and a beautiful point was being made, that you can't grow without being vulnerable. You see the point? So this idea that I'm going to protect myself and I'm not going to say anything, or I'm not going to be honest and open and I'm going to become a pure devotee, it's not going to happen like that. Because part of that humility is the vulnerability. Now, of course, there's another problem with that. Because now the problem becomes who to be vulnerable with. Because sometimes also you'll see people, they're stuck at one level of devotion, or they've left, or they've checked out. Why? Because they were vulnerable with the wrong person, and they were hurt so badly that now they don't trust anyone. Huh? So I was explaining this to some devotees recently. Actually, we were doing some classes on leadership, Bhishmadev's instructions to Yudhisthira, leadership. And I was explaining to the attendees that the head protects the heart, and the heart protects the head. Actually, Ruben, who was here earlier, because we often speak about this stuff, he made a wonderful point to me. See, how is someone going to become a devotee if you're not soft-hearted? It's just not going to happen. Because the whole idea of bhakti is it's about loving exchanges. So if a devotee becomes hard-hearted, bitter, resentful, you're in real trouble. We're in real trouble. But then what do we do? How do we bring all of this together? What it means is we should wisely choose association. We should love everyone. But you can love people very easily if you really understand where they are and where they're coming from. You know, again, you get these extremes. One extreme, complete sentiment. The other extreme, completely guarded. No, we should have loving exchanges. That same openness to the mantra, that openness to good association, it's transformative. Right? So without vulnerability, we can't grow. But we have to be vulnerable in the right way, at the right time, in the right association. So that's how we can help to raise ourselves in a low moment, by two things. One, understanding what helps me to get through those times personally, and two, regular association with sincere, mature and compassionate devotees. Okay? Technically, the Shastra says swajatiya, snigdha. So snigdha means affectionate. Swajatiya means like-minded. Right? So there's all these, and it also says exalted. Right? So we're looking for that kind of association. And then in that association, we should have an openness in our exchanges. I personally have seen so many times in my life where, because of guidance and association, so many things became clear to me that I would never have understood by myself. It required someone else to point out, Buddha Bhavana, look at this, or focus in this direction, or have you noticed this? Do this instead. It's been groundbreaking, so I've seen it does work. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay, no worries. Do we have time for one more, or should we end? One more? Okay, so if you pass to the Mataji here, and then we'll have that last question, and then we'll end.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
For class. You mentioned about need of maturity to understand the truth. So when we discuss with devotees, so questions come around use of milk and honey.
So questions come around?
Use of milk and honey in our movement. Mm-hmm. So how to, because they stand with their own morality, so, and there is a lot of things on the internet as well. So how to, where to leave, where to...
Yeah, sometimes, this is an intuitive answer to your question. Sometimes you have options to, you have more than one option. So, you know, for example, I'll speak generally. For example, you know, in some situations, a devotee may have more facilities so they can do things to the highest standard. Right? I'm reluctant to tell a devotee who's, you know, just on some very, very basic, has some very basic resources that, you know, the milk that you're buying from the shop, you shouldn't drink that. You should actually pay more money for this other type of milk. Because I know that for that person, it's a much bigger percentage of their actual income. So they may struggle in so many ways because they actually don't have that many resources. It would be great as an ideal, absolutely, you know. But if it's going to be so much of a disturbance and it's going to make some basic foundational things that they need to do much harder, I will tell them to adjust that. You see, they're still taking milk, but I will tell them to adjust it according to your circumstances. So I think that what we can also consider is sometimes some of us are in a position where we have more options about how we do things. And then if we can, let's do it to the highest standard that we can. But we should be, like Prabhupada said, 100% strict with ourselves and 90% tolerant with everyone else. You see, that's the point. We want people, we want everyone to come up to the high standard of devotion, but we want to inspire them to do it, not force them to do it. Right? I mean, if someone's a guru and we've bought into that connection, then there's a slight different dynamic. But generally, right, we want to inspire, and the way that we inspire them is showing our own example. What happens if we live like this? Okay, so that's the rule that Prabhupada gave there. 100% strict with ourselves. Let's do the best that we can. And let's be the example for others to follow in whichever way we can. Let's just do the best that we can. That's what it boils down to. You know, Iendra Prabhu told, I think it was a Kinchana Krishna. I think it was, he said to him once, he said, the Acharyas, he said, they know that in Kali Yuga people are not so expert. He said, all they want to see is that you're doing the very best that you can. That's their question. Are you doing the actual best that you can? And I remember Tamal Krishnamaj told Prabhupada he had a dream. In the dream, Prabhupada was giving a report to the previous acharyas. And Prabhupada said to the previous acharyas, in this dream of Tamal Krishnamaj, he said, I'm preaching to these people in Kali Yuga. He said, they're not very intelligent, right? They're not very competent. He basically gave a list of all the things that they do wrong. He said, but the one thing that they, the only thing that they've managed so far to do is take shelter at my lotus feet. Right? But the one thing that they've managed to do is take shelter at my lotus feet. That was in the dream Tamal Krishnamaj had. So when he woke up from the dream, he told Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, that is a fact. That's what Prabhupada said. Isn't that interesting? Actually, that is a fact. So let us try our best. Just like in this verse, the last sentence, the Lord is so merciful. We've seen it, haven't we? If we're honest, we've seen, I mean, haven't you seen it so many times? Christians like, I'm so fallen, and look how much he's helping me. Wow, isn't that incredible? Even someone like me, right? We've seen it so many times. So we should always remember that the mercy is always there because we've seen it. And it's unlimited. It's unlimited. So on that basis, let us try our best to receive as much mercy, as much help as we can, knowing that then everything can happen. Yeah. So merciful, so strict with ourselves is kind and merciful with everyone else. Does that answer your question? And if you want any specifics, then you can speak to your own mentors about the standards that you can apply in a given area. Okay, but always with a mood of progression. Okay, thank you very much. So we'll stop there. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Janitai Gaura Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol.